Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart, me and John sit down with Sam Foley. Sam has all kind of history in this game, in teaching, in business, entrepreneurship. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode with Sam Foley on Two Dudes, One Cart. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm joined with John as always, and we're joined by a special guest, Mr. Sam Foley. Sam, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Just had a great day of teaching and making people happy.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, Sam, kind of give us the, I know you've had a long career in teaching. If you could give us, you know, whatever, about the 20,000 foot view of how you started in golf, where you've been, and where you are now, if you don't mind.
Oh, God. How long is the show?
Hey, we'll break this thing up in a couple shows if you need to, sir. we want to get all your info out there.
Well, I became a full-time teaching professional in 1990. So, what is that, 34 years now? And, yeah. I hate to say this, but it's not like a job, because when you love what you do, it doesn't seem like a job, but it certainly is. And to go back to 1990, I moved to Arizona, Sedona, Arizona, to apprentice under a guy named Chuck Hogan. And I was fortunate enough to meet Lynn Marriott, who was his number one instructor at the time, and she's gone on to be LPGA Teacher of the Year, and she's wonderful. And so I've got some good people that I learned under, and I wasn't able to teach for Chuck's golf school, and I started my own golf school in Phoenix, Arizona, in 1990. And it was called Acceler Programs. I started it with Dave Bisbee, who's currently at a place called Seven Canyons out in Sedona, Arizona, which is an amazing property. And he and I started a golf school, and within a year, we were the fastest growing golf school in the United States. We went from one location at the Point Hilton to 10 locations within a year and a half.
Oh, shit.
And I was the director of professional and player development, so I created the curriculum for the golf clients, but also I was responsible for teaching the teachers and our methodology. And I think I taught over 60 golf teaching professionals our methods, and it's like herding cats. But and we're trying to chase them all around the country and make sure that they were saying what we wanted them to say and presenting them with the methodology that we wanted them to espouse. And of course, we're all functions of our previous learning, and invariably they would go off on their own little tangents and teach what they always taught. So that was tough. But I went from Phoenix, Arizona to Denver because I was responsible for opening up all these new sites, or at least some of them. And I taught in Denver for a summer, and then I went to Palm Springs and taught at PGA West. Is another one of our golf schools. I went from PGA West to Park City, Utah, and taught up there for the next summer. And I went from there to Mission Hills and Palm Springs, and went from there to I lived in all these places for 6 months at a time, because you got to go where the sun's shining, you know, to chase the money.
Exactly.
And I moved to San Francisco, and I taught at I directed seven other instructors at a double-decker driving range, and it was right downtown, right near the financial district. Had great success there, and ran into some trouble with a couple of unruly instructors, and I had to call it quits because they were threatening me. And so from that point, I started my own venture, and I've sort of been doing that ever since to some degree. And I started a company called Future Golf. And Future Golf was a high-tech training methodology with some pretty fancy technology. And if you're familiar with golf tech, I was golf tech before there was a golf tech.
Oh, okay.
I had that technology with the double cameras and the biomechanical data that the Future Golf system provided. And I could tell you everything, like how much grip pressure you had during your swing. I could tell you how much weight was on each foot during the swing, how much your spine was bending, how much your hips are turning, how much your shoulders are turning. And anyway, with this technology, I did three things with it. I had my own training, swing training studio in Sausalito. We moved from San Francisco over the bridge to Sausalito. And I taught with this technology off the deck of my house. And my deck was like 500 feet overlooking the bay. And we were looking down on Alcatraz. I mean, it was the coolest place to give a golf lesson, man. I did that. I also had a golf academy up in Napa. This guy had a private golf estate, nine holer. He had a clubhouse, pool, tennis courts, croquet court. And he would rent it to me for $1,000 a day. And then I would charge these stockbrokers in San Francisco, you know, $500 a person, and have six or seven come up at a time. And it worked out great. It was fabulous. And also with the technology, I did corporate events, corporate villages at tour events, and companies like AT&T, Cadillac flew me down to this Future Golf swing training. I call it the Future Golf Interactive Swing Training System. And so I traveled the country with this technology and showed people their swings like they've never seen it before. So that was a time where I really had felt like I had come into my own, and was making some news on a national level. Had to move back, didn't have to. I wanted to move back to Indiana because I had a daughter back here and a son was missing their dad. So I had to rein that all in, and I moved back to Indiana, and I tried to get set up at the Brickyard Crossing, and they said that they were okay. And I went back to another guy by the name of Stan Burton at Heartland Crossing, and he was opening up that course. And I opened that up with him under the Sam Foley Golf Academy moniker. And featuring the Future Golf Swing Training System, and had a facility built on the driving range. It was really nice. And about the time that facility got done, the Brickyard Crossing came calling and said, we'll build you a building. We want you to teach here. We have the back of the range that sits empty. That's where I wanted to be all along anyway. So I decided to move my golf academy to the Brickyard Crossing. I was teaching under the Brickyard Crossing Golf Academy banner. And but that was okay. And I did some really great things there. I was there for 10 years. And I was holding two titles, actually, there for about 7 years, where I was the director of the instruction of the Golf Academy, but I was also manager of business development for the golf property. So I was basically selling golf outings and sponsorships for the Brickyard Crossing. And it was great. It was a really good gig. And I did some really good things. So that ended in 2010. And then I opened up a indoor golf training and entertainment center up in Noblesville. And it was one of the coolest facilities I've ever seen, 13,000 square foot. And I didn't build it. I was the recipient of someone else's failure. We had four PGA Tour simulators, a 3,000 square foot putting green. We had extra rooms where you could hit balls, two rooms where you hit into a net and the balls teed up automatically from out of the floor for you. We had a conference room with a big screen in there. We had a cafe and a bar with served beer and wine and good food. We had a fitness center inside there, a full-service fitness center, as well as a custom club repair and building room, which was decked out with all the bells and whistles. And the idea was to have a membership that had to pay, you know, year-round to belong there. And after the first year, we realized people didn't want to join for the whole year. They wanted to join for the winter season. And so we acquiesced and had some wintertime memberships. And of course, everybody wanted to do that. So I was stuck not making any money in the summer, which is not a good business model, guys. And, right. and so that lasted for about 5 years. And all the while, it was called Golf 365, and so where you could play every day of the year, and we always invited people to come in and get their game on. That was our moniker. And you know, golf lessons. We were on the Nike staff for fittings. So I mean, it was your one stop shop. It was wonderful. And I would submit it's better than what X Golf is now. Not necessarily better than Top Golf, but it was a precursor to Top Golf. And right up the street from it, actually, is 150th Street. Top Golf's on 116th Street, I believe. But so anyway, the things were looking sort of bad there, so I had to take another position. And I had found out that a golf course, which is very well hidden in Fishers, that it was called Balmoral, that they were going to close their doors. They were trying to transition from a highly private course, nine holes, to more of a semi-private, and they didn't have anybody to really run with that. And I had some experience at the Brickyard Crossing with my business development skill set, and I said, look, let me run with this, and let's try to keep this thing open for another year. And the year before I got there, they'd lost $100,000. And after my first year there, we'd made $30,000. So we were in the positive. We made some money. And of course, I started up the Sam Foley Golf Academy brand again and had my banners and signs out on Allisonville Road. And it was fun. It was great fun. But I was managing the entire property, and I had a bunch of volunteer staff, many of whom were seniors and then also some juniors. And that first year went really well. And the course had sort of gone downhill, and we brought it back. And then the next year came along, and we were going to do Balmoral and make it, you know, even bigger. And, you know, you lose members every year. And we decided to have an open house every Saturday in April to solicit new members. And it rained every Saturday in April. And we didn't have the membership run that we thought. And so here's an interesting little turn. I suggested that we try to start foot golf at this little 9-hole golf course in Fishers. And the owner didn't want to do it because he's a traditionalist. But after the rainy April, he said, well, let's give it a shot. So I created a whole brand and the scorecards and a logo and the rules and a map. And, you know, it was, and then I thought that having foot golf was going to be good for two reasons. One is it was going to generate some additional revenue, not a lot, but also it was a marketing vehicle to let people know about Balmoral because people didn't know about it. Well, after I introduced foot golf, people knew about it. we got, you know, coverage in the Indianapolis Star, the Indianapolis Business Journal, the current newspaper up in Hamblin County. We were on the cover of that. And all the TV stations came up and they did interviews with me. So we were the hottest thing going in the soccer community. For those who don't know what foot golf is, you kick a soccer ball into a hole and you count the number of kicks it takes. And Ted Bishop, who was the owner of the Legends Golf Course in Franklin and was at the time the PGA president, and he then adopted foot golf down at the Legends as well. He was doing some really good things down there. So we sort of jumped on board that thing, and we were the 34th foot golf course in the United States. And now there's over 1,000 there's 1,000 foot golf courses in the United States, I think. But we were on the early part of that. And anyway, we had 3,000 rounds of foot golf in 3 months, and we were doing more foot golf than we were golf. And a lot of members didn't like it, obviously, because they had a bunch of kids running around kicking soccer balls in their nice little private little golf course. But anyway, that's my foray into foot golf. I actually got into the business of foot golf because all these pros from around the country were calling me because the owners wanted to have foot golf and the golf pros didn't know how to do it. So I was consulting. I designed 12 different foot golf courses in the United States. And I also got into the manufacturing of the equipment of the foot golf cups because there was only one manufacturer in North America. And anyway, it was a nice little run there with foot golf. But from there, I started teaching at a place called Shore in 2015. And Shorty's was a 18-hole pitch and putt. And they had driving range with grass and mats. And it was a great place for people who were getting into the game and people who wanted to practice. And it was right there on 96th Street in between Range Line and College, right off 96th Street, and bordering 465, actually. And I didn't think it was great in the beginning because I was used to the Brickyard and PGA West, you know? But I really came to appreciate the fact that, you know, facilities like that are introducing new people to the game every day. And everybody needs help, right? I like to say everybody needs me, just not everybody wants me. And I had a nice run there till 2021, and the owner, Don Turchin, sold it and to a developer, and now there's apartments and condos and single family homes being built on it as we speak. And so that left me sort of looking for my next venture. And I had a couple of things happen in 2022 that teaching during the winters, because it's Shorty's, there's nowhere to teach in the winter. I've been teaching in the winters for 5 years now in Florida. And I'm currently at Marriott Grand Vista, which is a Nick Faldo designed property with a driving range that's 280 degrees around. And it's a little 9-hole golf course. It's very nice. It's not super challenging, but there's 1600 rooms there. And most of the people that come there are going to Disney anyway.
Yeah.
But, I've had a nice run doing that. And that brings us to today, where on April 1st of this year, I accepted the position at Purgatory Golf Club there in Noblesville, where I rekindled my Sam Foley Golf Academy brand and also added the five-star in the title. And I've been there since April 1st, and I'm working my butt off every day there to try to generate interest in lessons. It hasn't traditionally been known as a hotbed of teaching activity. My friend John Stutz was a longtime head professional there, and he did a really good job with people, but he wasn't a full-time teaching professional. And as I understand it, I'm the first full-time teaching professional there at Purgatory in the 25-year history of Purgatory.
I can believe that, because I don't think I've seen anybody out there actually getting a lesson before you came on board.
Yeah, right. Me either.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike Merchant, who is the owner of Purgatory and a PGA professional, you know, he just built such an incredible facility. That lodge clubhouse is amazing. The golf course is all you want. At the time, I think it was when they built it in 2000, it was the longest golf course in the state, which has now been surpassed by French Lick and the foul course at IU.
Yeah.
But it's still quite a test. And I'm slowly but surely sort of garnering a following. A lot of people from Shorty's and north side of Indianapolis are coming up. Yesterday, in fact, a client that was with me at Golf 365 literally 7 years ago, called me and said he and his buddy wanted to take a full-day golf school. And so we did that yesterday. That was great. My first one at Purgatory. I hope to do many more of those. Because, gentlemen, when you immerse yourself in golf, learning, right? Not playing golf, in learning with no interruptions, you can really get a lot out of the experience.
Oh, 100%.
And, you know, and just not everybody that's done one of those, right? Yeah, people have gone lessons, people have taken a clinic here and there, but totally immersing yourself with no phones, no interruptions. I mean, it's amazing what we can accomplish.
Now, Sam, how many people, if you do that, what would be the amount of people you could do at one time? Do you think that limit is probably you and three other guys, kind of a foursome type
yes.
setup?
Yes. I mean, I've done for years, and five to one ratio is sort of the norm. But
right.
At Purgatory, I want to go out. I want to play with you too, and see if we can transfer some of the things that you've learned
right.
onto the golf course. So, you know, so three max, and when I play along, that makes a four. So we can sort of meld into the groups that are playing already, and it's not a. Well, it depends on who's behind us, right? Or if anybody's behind us, that we can take our time, which is best case, but. You still want to be able to play and see their action on the golf course.
Yeah. So basically when you get them out on the range, you transfer to live on real life playing.
Right. And you know, it's, you know, you guys are both taking lessons, John. I've helped you on occasion. It's not easy changing behavior, especially a biomechanical behavior. It takes multiple repetitions to make it a habit, a swing habit, or what's commonly called muscle memory. And most people never get the reps that they need to make something a habit. And that's why guys like me have jobs. Because people are continually looking for the next latest and greatest thing. And it's always inside their head.
Yeah. No, that's my biggest problem.
Yeah.
What? Your head?
Yeah. The mental game for me is out the window half the time.
Go
ahead.
What made you choose the path of teaching? Was it just something that, you know, you're like, oh, I like playing, but was it just something in you, or was it something in maybe your parents? What got you into the teaching aspect of teaching golf?
Well, my parents were, you know, blue collar, and my dad never golfed, and nor did my mother. But what got me into the game originally was I could hit a golf ball farther than I can hit a baseball, and I thought that was cool. Plus, the golf course is a beautiful environment, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. And then, you know, I played high school and collegiately, and then turned professional. And, you know, as a club pro, and I don't know for your audience, there's three kinds of golf pros. There's the club pro who operates and manages golf operations at the course. There's the touring pro. Guys or women we see on TV playing, they're eating what they're killing. And then there's a teaching pro, and a club pro can also be a teacher, but he's not really known as a teaching pro. The teaching pros do it full time, when you do something full time, you get pretty good at it, or hopefully. And when I got a chance to teach my first 2 or 3 years in the business, it was fun. I didn't know what the heck I was talking about in the early years, but it was fun to try to make people happy. And, you know, my mission in life basically is to help people enjoy their life more through recreation. And the vehicle is golf.
You got that?
At one point it was foot golf also. But the real answer to your question was, when I'm teaching and somebody does something different and they hit a great shot, they turn around and look at me like they just found a bar of gold. And it makes me feel good that they feel good. So it's a very symbiotic relationship with my clients. And, you know, unlike many projects that people work on for weeks and months to see their outcomes, to see the fruits of their labor, well, mine's right in front of me, and it's immediate.
Yeah, you get instant feedback.
Yes, instant gratification, instant feedback. And that fits my personality, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, just talking from personal experience, you know, I went over, when I first moved down here, you know, I got to meet you, and heck, here we are, you know, 6 years later and still buddies and still like it. And it's all because of golf.
And how the heck did you get better than me, John? I'm still trying to figure that out.
I don't know if that's still the case. Still hit a lot of toe shots.
So it's been a great ride, guys. I mean, this is my, 43rd year, I turned pro in 83, so my 41st year as a golf professional, and I turned full-time teacher professional in 1990, so it's been a great ride.
Yeah, I mean, especially with all the places that you've got to travel, you know, you're talking about, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You said Palm Springs. I'm sure Steve and I's ears both perked up on that, because I think that's our, at least for me, I know that's my favorite place to go, to golf. And I'd go back there every year if we could. But I mean, Denver, Florida, you name it, you've done it, you've seen it. That has to be awesome too. I mean, outside of the work part, just being able to visit all these cool places in the United States.
Right. And, I've been, I haven't been traveling nearly as much with my golf ventures that I did at one time. But you're right, John. It's been, I mean, look, I'm a guy from Petersburg, Indiana. Where the hell's Petersburg, right?
Exactly.
And to do all the things I've done, I can point to golf as all of them. I mean, my second wife, I met her giving her a golf lesson. And she opened up a whole world for me that I knew nothing about. We traveled Ireland, Scotland, Spain, you know, and if it wasn't for golf, I would have never met her.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, look how lucky. I mean, you got to meet me. How lucky are you? You know what I mean?
I know. I left you out, didn't I?
Yeah, I was waiting for it.
Most of us do, Sam. Most of us do live him out.
But, you know, guys, I've got some, I think, some very interesting, I mean, your clients that listen are golfers, and they're all interested in golf instruction at some level. And many of them think that they can teach, but they're mistaken. You know, over the course of my career, my teaching has evolved. You know, I was the club pro guy who got out once in a while and taught, didn't really know much. I just threw around big words because it made me sound smart. And then once I got into it full time, I really started appreciating, you know, it's learning. It's teaching and learning. Golf just happens to be what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I became a student of how people learn. And that's evolved. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to go on a little riff here. About 7 years ago, I realized I'm not in the swing changing business. I know that may sound odd, but I'm in the thought changing business.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because thought precedes action. Right?
Yep. 1,000%.
So I need to get really good at helping people navigate their thoughts or guiding them to their thoughts that they need and discarding the thoughts that aren't serving them. Right? And golf's a complicated sport. It's multiple moving parts, right? So it's not going to be as easy as what I'm about to say. But if I realize, guys, that of all the swing thoughts, and I'm going to define swing thought for you, it's the 1 second prior to swinging the club away from the ball. Where's your attention, your focus, your concentration?
Yeah, that's a...
And then the backswing takes about 0.8 seconds. What are you thinking, feeling during that 0.8 seconds? Then the downswing takes about 0.3 seconds. What are you thinking, feeling, focusing on during that time? And I go ahead and give you 0.9 seconds to finish your swing. So that adds up to 3 seconds. So when I'm teaching somebody, I'm like, hey, can you think of one thing for 3 seconds? And I'll hold my finger up and I'll say, look at my finger. I'll hold it there for 3 seconds. I'll say, did you think of anything else? And some of them say, well, yeah. I'm like, why am I have to look at your finger? But I just want to prove to people that they can focus on one thing for 3 seconds. Okay. So if that's the case, what are the options of swing thoughts? Because this game's been around for 400 plus years, been millions of people play it. We've all had different swing thoughts. You know, John, I think you told me one time that it's that fourth swing thought that gets in the way.
Yeah, that's it.
And you know, it's impossible to think about too many things. And teaching pros are notorious for having you think too many things at one time, right? Because we want to help. We may see 3 or 4 things that you need to do differently, but for us to come out and say, hey, look, you got to keep your head down. You got to shift your weight. You got to release the club face and you got to finish in balance. Well, somebody's going to look at me like, I'm supposed to do all that?
Yeah, what the hell?
Right. So anyway, I'm in the swing thought business. And I, through some research, determined that there's only 5 categories of swing thought. And John, give me your last shot that you hit. What were you thinking about when you were swinging?
Don't go look.
That is true.
Okay. And
normally for me, it's like, I got to feel 75% on my backswing. So I'm trying to tell myself, just do a 3/4 backswing.
All right, stop. So a 3/4 backswing, are you talking about what your body needs to do to achieve 3/4? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about in my mind, I have to think 3/4 because even my 3/4 feel is actually like 110%.
Yeah, I know all too well what you're talking about, by the way. but when you use the word feel, well, what's doing the feeling? Well, your body. right? So you can be aware of what your body is feeling, or you can be thinking about what you want to feel. I mean, that's the dominant one, really, the dominant swing thought category, right?
Yeah.
So that's one out of five possibilities of swing thoughts, categories. Do you want to take a stab at another area of focus?
Mm. Fire away, Sam.
All right. I can tell you what most people think about, and that's hit the damn ball. They're thinking about that ball.
Yeah.
And that ball is very powerful. I mean, like when I'm given a lesson and I want them to feel their shoulder under their chin at the top of their backswing. Right? So I'm on the same page with them. They're going to think about it. And then they start their swing and they think, hit the ball.
Yep.
Well, they forget about what their intention was. And of course, they're going to go back and revert back and do what they've always done. Right. That's part of being human. You know, we're all of us are functions of our previous learning. And somebody's learned to swing and they don't rotate their shoulders very much. So I need them to focus on their body, their shoulders specifically. And if they do that, chances are really good that their body will respond appropriately. You with me?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but when they think about that golf ball, that golf ball is so powerful, guys. It wants to take your attention and hold it hostage.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell people, do not give that golf ball that kind of power.
No, I believe it. I mean, the golf ball is cunning, baffling, and powerful.
And there's some good golf ball thoughts, by the way. Do you want to hit below the equator? Do you want to sort of hit down on the ball? Do you want the ball to go up and curve from right to left in the sky? There's some good golf ball thoughts, but in the golf instruction world, it's not very conducive. So you can have body thoughts. You can have golf ball thoughts. Do you guys ever think about the club when you're swinging?
Fuck. All the time.
What you want your club to do? Right? Keep the face square. Three quarters. That's why I was asking you, John. Were you three quarters with your body? Is that your thought? Or three quarters with your golf club? Was that your thought?
Yes, to both. That's how messed up my mind is.
Yeah. So, you know, swing path, club face, right? It's all valid. And there's times where I want you to think golf club thoughts. And by the way, none of these categories are any better than the other. I'm just saying, here's your options. And ultimately, what I'm getting after is, let's figure out how you do it right or how you do it differently, and let's do more of that.
Yeah.
Right? So you have ball thoughts. You have club thoughts. You have target thoughts. And there's another one that's pretty important. How about where you want the ball to go?
Yeah. Target thoughts.
Target thoughts. Absolutely. And I sort of left this out of my bio. I've had the opportunity to work with some touring professionals as their instructor. Chad Collins is one of them. He's won about $7 million. He's out of Cloverdale. Nate Lashley, he's a PGA Tour winner.
Yep.
He won the Rocket Mortgage three or four years ago. And I know what those guys think because I've been on the range and, you know, two dozen different tour events. And I hear them about target. Certain mechanics are solid, right? And they're not going to be thinking about hitting the ball. By the way, some people think about don't miss the ball. that's a category.
I've been there.
So target thoughts are really magic. If you can look down at your ball, make your swing, but still have your awareness on the target, it's amazing how your body will accommodate your club to hit a ball at a target. Sometimes I equate it to shooting a free throw, right?
Yeah.
In basketball, we're just looking at the rim. Well, the rim's your target. So you're thinking about, okay, I want my wrist to bend to 45 degrees. I want my elbow to fully extend. You know, you're not thinking about body thoughts. You're thinking about the target.
Yeah.
And you're sort of responding to the target. Or you can be like the Michael Jordan turnaround baseline. He's all contorted. His body's way out of position. But when he thinks about the target, the rim, his body does what it needs to do to make the ball go in. So we're up to four, guys. Body thoughts, ball thoughts, target thoughts, and club thoughts. And I'm going to give you the fifth category. And that's anything else.
Yeah.
And I've yet to hear anything good come from the anything else category. Right?
Yeah.
So, you can be thinking about food, money, sex, booze, kids, dog, work.
Yeah, noise.
Right? Because your brain's on constant chatter. Right? We're not used to slowing down and thinking about one thing. But when we are, we're sort of in this flow state, right? We're in the moment. That's what I think is one of the allures of golf, because it takes you away from everything and puts you right in the moment. You're thinking probably golf, ball, body, target, or club, probably. Or, you know, in an instant, a millisecond, your thought can go from hitting down on the ball to, oh, I forgot to close my email or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, I thought I'm the kind of guy who wants to get to the source of the cause.
And we're going to end this episode right here. Tune in next week to catch the second half of this interview with Mr. Sam Foley on Two Dudes, One Car. Thank you. Like the podcast. Leave some comments. Let us know what you're thinking. And again, thank you for listening.